A year ago, two corruption-busting lawyers were arrested Hollywood style. We're catching up with them now. Welcome, Bradley Conradi and Sarah Berger.
Thank you, Chris.
Sarah, may I start with you? What is the National Prosecuting Authority telling you? What are they doing?
Chris, it's on the one hand, I mean, there's two things that are happening parallel, or many things that are happening at the same time. The one is, I wanted to put in representations to be released out of this matter. I've said before that there is absolutely no evidence against me in this matter. But I've heard from my attorney that the prosecutor said that he's not prepared to hear my representations at this stage. So I'm being dragged into this matter for a prolonged period of time. There are other things that are happening as well, which is just so totally malicious. On the other hand, other prosecutors within the very same office have subpoenaed Horizon Forensics and myself to be a witness in a matter against a former employee for an investigation that Horizon Forensics did. So I don't understand how that on the one hand, we are supposedly fraud and corruption accused. But on the other hand, we must also be witnesses for the matters that were purportedly obtained on the basis of fraud and corruption, which is, it's just mind frazzling.
Now, the NPA has also obtained a preservation order over the assets of the accused. How is this going to affect you, firstly, Bradley?
Well, we haven't seen any order. We've heard about it last week and Thursday via News 24. These orders are generally given in chambers without the other side getting an opportunity to state a case. Within a short period of time, either the NPA or the university, there can be no one else, took that court order and published it in the newspaper. And I learnt about that at 9:30 on Thursday night. But as I sit here today, I still do not have a copy of that order. So I do not know what it says, other than the few lines of actual detail that's contained in the article. In our view, there is no basis for that order. It is a year later now. It is completely malicious. It's designed to destroy us, which is consistent with what has happened to us in the past year by the NPA. And it is shocking that the prosecutor in this matter, and in fact, the director of that office in the Eastern Cape, have been allowed to pursue this matter. And that Shamila Batoy, and I'll mention her personally because she knows about this matter, has been brought to her attention by various people, has, as far as we know, taken no action to rein in rogue units. And they're rogue because we know that other people in the same office, they've been in touch with us, they want to continue their work with us, but a specific advocate was handpicked by the disgraced and now disbanded political Killing Stars team to ensure that maximum pain is inflicted on us. So I can't answer your question as to what is in it, but it is a drastic measure designed to strip us of our assets, supposedly temporarily, and which has an impact on our ability to work and to earn a living. That much will be for sure. But we will oppose that in the strongest terms. But we do not know what it says. We don't even say have the decency of having been given to it. It was more important for the print media to go out. Luckily, we insisted on a right of reply so that we could get our point of view across.
Sarah, you.
I'm at a loss. I mean, you know, I said it previously as well. We conducted a full audit of our work, you know, because the question in our minds, you know, what did we do wrong here? You know, and we did the work and we did it well. And, you know, what I've found in my own audit for both entities is that we have affidavits where the head of legal of the university, two executive members, in addition to that, have come under oath and confirmed that BCHC were their attorneys of choice generally. The same applies for Horizon Forensics. Horizon, there's another affidavit which was filed in the Oscar Mabuyane answering papers when the President of the Republic of South Africa was still cited as a respondent, as well as the Special Investigations Unit. Now, I mentioned it previously, but Horizon's work was audited from 2019 to 2023. They, in fact, visited our offices at Horizon in Cape Town because of the sensitive information that was contained in some of the investigations. The lead up to that was a meeting with executives at the university and PwC and ourselves to make an arrangement on how we address the audit, given the volume of data and given how far back they'd gone in the audit. As a result of that audit, we produced certain reports for PwC that they required and a declaration from myself. Now, one of the reports that we produced, they wanted to know, you know, when they quantify matters, how many people were disciplined or taken to a disciplinary hearing, for instance. So Horizon, based on its investigations and its knowledge of these people going, you know, through investigations and disciplinary processes, prepared a report of these disciplinary matters. And that was annexed to those papers in the Oscar Mabuyane matter. And with a paragraph to say that Horizon Forensics had prepared this report and submitted it to PricewaterhouseCoopers as part of its ongoing investigations at the university. This is aside from the fact that we've got a contract in place with the university. We've been paid three times post our arrest for work on the basis that the university needed to follow due diligence and confirm that the work had been completed. Those were the exact words. They then offered to pay us legal costs and interest on the money that was outstanding for 12 months in varying stages. So I'm at a genuine loss as to how, on the one hand, we are being prosecuted for the work that was confirmed in several criminal complaints as well, signed by the executive, where he said Horizon did this in 2021, Horizon did that in 2022. This work was never obtained from any kind of corrupt relationship. This work was given to us because we supported law enforcement, we supported the university, and we had the institutional knowledge to take matters forward when evidence was clearly purged or not available to other forensic investigators which do operate in the university. So I just feel like people are not coming forward and being honest about where their instructions came from, because the instructions did not come from who they say it came from. It came from the top office. And that is why there is a contract in place signed by the executive. That's why there were affidavits in place signed by the executive. And the bulk of the work for BCHC, which I was not involved in, and neither was Bradley, will show. I wanted
to speak to that, Sarah. Sorry to cut you, because I'm probably more qualified to speak to that. We have done an audit. We spent a lot of time on this. And we can safely say that the majority, vast majority of the instructions came from the head of legal at the university to other members of our firm. We sit today with matters that we have never seen before or heard of before. I have never, ever in person met the head of legal. I have never received an instruction from her. I would have been on a few occasions in a meeting with a whole lot of people where she would be in attendance if it required her input, along with the vice chancellor. But I do not know her. So I would say about up to 80% of the work that came through BCHC, I had absolutely no involvement with it at all. There were other professionals who had the relationship and who did the work, and it was done without my input, or my consent wasn't even required in order to do that work. This is known to the university. It is probably not known to the police who have not conducted an investigation into us. Till today, we have not been questioned. Not a single question. We have offered our assistance to the police during our incarceration. Our lawyers have offered it post our release, and they've never, ever taken us up on the matter. And we know, and we have evidence, that about 6 months after our arrest, they only started investigating, and they couldn't find, they do not even know what work we have done at the university. Yet they rushed off, arrested us, and put us in jail on the Easter weekend, kept me there for 14 days because they vigorously opposed bail, to use their words, only to tell me on the day that I finally got a bail hearing that they don't oppose my bail. Now, if that doesn't scare you, then I don't know what does. None of these have been put before anyone. It's not contained in the police docket. They have it because they have our computers, they have our cell phones, and all of that information comes off there. They have worked their way through it. They have seen fit, which they're not allowed to do, to simply exclude it from the docket. And the university's top brass, who were consulted on this, have sat silently without putting up their hand to say, actually, the work did not go to Mr. Conradi. This is the person that the work went to. And the work was done with distinction. We could not get the university off our backs. And I am on record for years having said, can we please stop working for this client? They are taking up too much of our time. And we even told them we want out. We cannot dedicate so much time to servicing you. And I got kickback to say, no, please, you've got to continue. You've got to continue because we produced results. I would say we had a 98% success rate over a 6-year period, all of which is forgotten. And everyone has got memory loss in order to protect themselves from whatever it is they need protection from. They do not know who we are. We are strangers. Yet I returned 350 lever arch files to the university. They paid BCHN a substantial amount of money. This was about 3 months after our release. And then we get accused. Well, before that already, we were accused of not having done the work, of being effectively involved in murder and intimidation in order to force contracts out of the university. It's utter nonsense. They approached us for help based on our skills. But people are sitting back and just allowing this to unfold. You have dockets that are prepared by low-level police officers that, quite frankly, had no idea what they are doing. People that were linked to the task team, that the disgraced task team that the new minister, thank goodness, put out of business because they were rogue.
Sarah, why was your case postponed last time?
The NPA said that they were applying for a racketeering certificate. Now, you'll recall from a couple of months ago, well, now a year ago, because we're now at that anniversary, as you said, they had already said in March last year that they had a racketeering certificate. That's what they told the court. Now we get back in September and they say they haven't even applied for it. I mean, no one points out these kinds of cardinal mistruths. And we are not sure now whether this racketeering certificate has in fact been applied for. So we're going to appear on Monday, which is now 6 months after that. In the interim, our lives are on hold. There is a great deal of uncertainty. And now we are being hit with this asset order, which is, I mean, talk about trying to demolish us in every respect of our careers and our capability to take care of our families and run our lives and be professionals. I just feel like it's gross, gross constitutional abuses. And I wonder if the failure to take my representations is as a result of trying to push this asset audit through for punishment.
What do you believe is behind your persecution and your prosecution?
I think it's become a conglomerate of things. I think, first of all, I'm sticking to exactly what we felt from the very beginning. We do believe that it's politically charged, because otherwise people, you know, if they were happy to do a proper investigation, they would have taken us up on the offer to speak with us. They would have come to us and engaged us, and they wouldn't have taken the diehard approach to persecute us. They would have said, if that's the evidence, that's the evidence, you know, and you know, withdrawn the charges. But they refused to speak to us. And in addition to that, I think there's a major concern from certain executives in the university's office that they may be implicated in a sense of failure, you know, on oversight and things like that. And they're too afraid to come forward and confirm. But the reality is that the documents speak for themselves. And why must we wait to court to purge these documents, which are going to speak for themselves? There is no funny business here. I just want to give an example from Horizon's side. In our contract with the university, which was negotiated over a protracted period of years, given to the head of legal, sitting in the executive office, when it came time to sign the contract, an addendum was prepared by the university, a well-thought-out addendum, which required that we continue to support law enforcement post-termination of the contract. Now, we didn't include that. That was drafted internally with a closed list of matters that we were completing. What people don't know is that we were so afraid at the time when all of these murders were taking place that we didn't want to travel anymore. We didn't want to actually be part of this university anymore or part of the investigative team. And when we got the shocking news that our instructing client was arrested, what did we do? We picked up the phone. I picked up the phone and spoke to the vice chancellor and said, I can't do this anymore. I want out. And that is when I prepared a list in conjunction with Bradley. We discussed it, and he said, get out. And so I prepared a list, which he submitted to the university on behalf of Horizon and said, these are the last matters that we're working on, but we can hand these over to whoever wants to work on them. But I was requested at the insistence of the executive office that I must complete the matters.
And be available post the termination of the contract to support law enforcement, which means they needed us in order to testify in the over 20 criminal cases that we have lodged and that was signed by the executive of the university. And Chris, it is shocking that we've lodged those complaints since 2020. They range from individuals stealing 6 million to 24 million rand. All the evidence is there. We've given in certain affidavits up to 7,000 pages of actual evidence. Not a single person, barring one, has been arrested. That's the one that they now want Horizon and Sarah to testify in. They've got all the details. We've given the walks. The MPA is in possession of it. They have not moved against a single person. Those people are scot-free. And I've got no doubt that the university is once again overrun by the very syndicates that we put our lives on the line to dismantle. Three different syndicates. We took them apart, and we did not have bodyguards. Neither of us. We can't afford that. We never could. Where every single executive in the university, all 15 or 16, whatever it is, were walking around with two bodyguards around the clock, although they had not had a single involvement in the fight against corruption there. We did it between BCHE and Horizon. Some of them just simply claimed the credit for having done it. But none of those people have been held accountable. The one that Horizon and Sarah have been asked to give evidence in, we recovered 2 million rand civilly from her. After suing her for 1.5 million rand, they settled on 2 million rand. That's the only case that now, 5 years later, is being pursued. Yet our case was opened up in January 2024. 2 months later, we were arrested, spent the Easter weekend and longer in prison, haven't moved one step to date. So all of this is part of a campaign. You asked Sarah about what is behind this. We maintain it's political. That is why you had Beke Cheli there, you had Masamola there, and you had Kumalo there, the latter being the head of the disgraced political killing task team and the head of crime intelligence, all sitting in court. It is only dawned upon us now, with all these fake degree scandals coming out, particularly from Forte, that it's not just about the premier who's implicated. There are other people in his cabinet who are in the same position. His predecessors, the former minister Kibet, also benefited from it. So we opened up Pandora's box when we exposed this, because if they actually must move against anyone, I think half of the people in government will have to be held accountable for not having degrees. And that is not going to happen. They are not going to be held to account.
Now, Bradley, last time we spoke, you said you were going to take action against the police, legal action for your arrests and prosecution. What is happening with that?
So we've submitted our letter of demand, which must be done within 6 months if you're suing the state. We've issued a detailed letter against the various police commissioners in various provinces, just given how the matter has gone. That's on the one hand. On the second hand, we have formally lodged the complaint with the Portfolio Committee on Police. We are demanding an investigation into who ordered our arrest, why was a jet paid for by the South African public made available to transport Sarah and myself to East London, and used on that same weekend to pick up two other accused, I think in two different provinces, and then the arrival of, I think it would be safe to say, hundreds of police people at court when we appeared. The roads were closed. There were cars, armed guns, people with automatic rifles right down the road, because the minister was in town, the head of police was in town, his entire cohort was in town, the head of crime intelligence was in town. All of that while at the same time we know in South Africa hundreds of people are being murdered each and every day. Women are being abused, are being raped. There are home invasions, assaults. That we're talking about hundreds per day. I've looked at the stats recently. And I think you have seen the photographs of the people that came to fetch us. If you watch the American television, the SWAT people have nothing on the people that came storming into my office with balaclavas, helmets, R5 rifles, two pistols, stun grenades. Where are those people when ordinary South Africans are just trying to stay safe? And that is what I want the Portfolio Committee to look into and to call those people to Parliament. And we have requested that we be allowed to be there, because we want to look at them and we want answers from them. We are not going to go anywhere. They are trying to put us out of business. They think that we are going to disappear, but they need to know one thing. The more they take from us, the more they strip us of what we have, the more difficult it's going to become for them. Sarah and I have one unique advantage over probably thousands of people that are subjected to political abuse in this country. We are both lawyers, and we are good lawyers. I've been a famous lawyer for nearly 20 years. I've stood up in the Constitutional Court myself, and I've argued precedent-setting cases, and I've had the assistance of Sarah in doing that. I do not need lawyers if it ever came down to that. And we will not stop. We will hold each and every person in this chain accountable within the law. They are not going to get away from it. They made the biggest mistake ever when they thought they're simply going to do to us what they have done to countless people. We have a constitution which we like to brag to everyone in the world and say it's the best constitution. I'll tell South Africa now it's utter rubbish. Not the constitution, the enforcement of it. It doesn't exist because I couldn't even enforce it. I've had so many of my rights abused as a lawyer with access to the best lawyers as friends and colleagues. Those rights do not exist. And that is wrong. They should be there for everyone.
Lastly, Sarah, how are you holding up ahead of your next appearance?
It's completely uncharted territory. I just getting up, and I know I have to get up in the morning. I know I have to go and, attend to certain things and be professional. But yeah, it's not easy, and I'm not happy, and I'm not well, unfortunately. I'm not happy, and I'm not well, and I don't know how much more of this I can actually handle, When you've done nothing wrong, and you're completely innocent, and there's not a shred of evidence against you, and you know that the work is completely above board, and that the system is being used against you, well, you're completely powerless. You're completely powerless because no one's listening, and you've got to just follow the process. You've just got to follow the process and wait in line while your life falls apart around you.
Bradley?
I'm besides myself. I'm strong, and I remain strong because I get a lot of support, psychological support, emotional support, support from friends, and I've had to do a lot of introspection and reflection. But I'm deeply affected by what has happened. I've got 11-year-old twin daughters that are aware of this. They are aware that I used to serve for more than 12 years as a judge in the labor court, which they, in their minds, I work for the government. And I had to sit them down one day and tell them that when I disappeared, I was not out of the country on business over the Easter weekend, because they're smart enough to have known that I would never, ever miss an Easter weekend with them. And I did. I couldn't speak to them. I couldn't see them. And they sat me down and said, "Dad, what is wrong? Please don't lie to us. We want to know what is happening." And I had to tell them that I went to jail. And that broke my heart because, like with most children, they look up to their father. They tell me they had the worst Easter ever. I promised them, amidst my busy schedule as it was, that we would spend a weekend together, and I couldn't fulfill that promise. So I've got to manage that. Every time I pack a bag to go somewhere for work, my children get depressed. They come and they ask me, "Where are you going? When will you be back? Please promise that you'll be back tonight." That is the direct consequence of what has happened. And these people that have done this to us, unfortunately, go to bed at night and they don't give a damn about the damage that they've caused. Now I've got to explain to my family, which I've had to do on Thursday night, Friday night, that we may end up with nothing. Everything that I've worked for may be under preservation because of what has happened. And I may not be able to look after them the way I've been able to do, built on 30 years of expertise and the creation of wealth, all because some fools and compromised people, deeply, deeply compromised people, have decided that they will do what is a national pastime in South Africa, scapegoat other people, sit in dark rooms and figure out how to abuse your power in order to save your own ass. That is what has happened. So when I walk to the door at night, my children are filled with relief that I've actually come home, because they are so scared that I'm never going to come home. So we'll start a new chapter, but they can be assured that we will fight this order and we will continue to expose We will not be negative. The wheel has turned and it will turn. You cannot hide the truth away. And my plea to South Africans is, don't be naive. Don't stand around the fire and speak about corruption. Don't get enjoyment out of what you see as the fall of Sarah and myself. We are ordinary people who were doing the right thing for 6 years, and we never in our wildest dreams believed that we would ever spend a day of our lives in jail, let alone be pulled through a long case because it just couldn't happen to us and in South Africa. Well, let me tell you, if it can happen to us, it can happen to anyone. And people need to wake up and they need to stand up for their rights so that we can hold these people to account. Or they will try and destroy your life. They think nothing about doing it. But we will hold them accountable, Chris. That is the promise that I'm making. I've made it to my children. I've made it to myself because that is the right thing to do. We're not here to just get off. That's not enough for us. Let us off on Monday. It doesn't stop. We want every single person to answer for what they have done to us and the reason why they had to do it. And we will continue to pursue that till our last days.
Thank you. That was Bradley Conradie and Sarah Berger speaking to BizNews. I'm Christine. Thank you, Bradley. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Chris.